Welcome to Wall Street Unspun with your host, Peter Schiff.
But it's a giant bubble in search of a pin, and it's going to find one.
Are you confused with the ups and downs of the economy and what it means to you?
Don't believe the propaganda, and that's what it is. When you're listening to an analyst on a lot of these popular financial shows, you're not getting investment advice. You're getting propaganda.
Get ready to untangle the web of misinformation provided by the mainstream media.
These firms are trying to sell you stocks. Their real clients, their banking clients, are trying to get rid of stock.
And now, here's your host of Wall Street Unspun, the president of Euro Pacific Capital and a licensed broker with a passion for truth. It's Wall Street Unspun with Peter Schiff.
Hi, everybody. This is Peter. Welcome again to another live episode of Wall Street Unspun, midweek market update. I am doing this show live from my website at www.europac.net. And also on the shortwave radio at 5.07 megahertz. Now, I'm doing this show now. I mentioned it last week. I've got a new piece of equipment to improve the audio quality. Unfortunately, the power cord is faulty, and there's a good chance that I'm going to get cut off. If I do get cut off, we're probably going to have to be down for a minute or two, and I will get back on a normal phone line and do the show.
Euro Pacific Capital is an independent brokerage firm on a mission to inform its client base and prospective clients about economic and market events that could affect their financial security. Euro Pacific Capital seeks to provide solutions designed to protect our clients and their families from the U.S. government and its inflationary practices. The time to act is now, while you still have the opportunity to get your money out of the dollar. It's legal to do so, and after a consultation with one of Euro Pacific's brokers, you will understand how this decision could ensure your financial security. We offer a full array of services ranging from retirement and trust accounts to complete financial planning, checking accounts with or without debit cards, and life insurance, even annuities. With our independent, no-nonsense investment advice that's a cut above the run-of-the-mill commentary that is passed for research for far too long on Wall Street, we suspect investors will find a home at Euro Pacific Capital.
Anyway, this is an important show. We have a lot to talk about. The Federal Reserve today made an announcement that, of course, is what I feared the Federal Reserve was going to do. And they're basically announced today, in addition to all of these securities that they have already bought, all the toxic instruments already on their balance sheet, the Fed is going to buy another $750 billion of mortgage securities. They're going to buy another $100 billion of agency government debt and $300 billion worth of treasuries. In other words, they're going to print up $1.1 trillion and monetize debt. And of course, this is massive inflation. This is exactly what I've always felt the government was going to do, to try to artificially stimulate our collapsing economy, to try to keep this phony house of cards propped up, to try to keep real estate prices from falling, stock prices from falling, companies from going bankrupt. And of course, none of this is going to work. I mean, it will work in the sense that they will stop the fall in asset prices. When the Fed creates enough money, real estate prices will stop falling, and they will start to rise. And stock prices will stop falling, and they will start to rise. But the problem is the price of everything else will rise much faster than the price of stocks and the price of real estate. And ultimately what that means is the real value of our assets are going to plunge even faster because of what the Federal Reserve is doing. And what they are doing is destroying the value of our money. Now, it's not going to help alleviate the problems of the unemployed. More and more people are going to continue to lose their jobs. In fact, people are going to lose more jobs as a result of what the federal government is doing, and they're going to find it very difficult to get new jobs. But the bigger problem for the unemployed is how expensive it's going to be if they want some food, or if they want to heat their homes or drive their cars. Prices are going to literally explode. If people thought commodity prices were high last year, wait till they see where they're going based on what the Fed is already committed to and what they're going to do. Because this isn't the end. They're going to be buying a lot more. You know, when the Fed announced that they're going to buy $300 billion of treasuries, the initial move in the treasury market was a rise. Bond prices went up. But why would that happen, right? If they're printing money, they're actually debasing the dollar. And what bonds are promises to pay dollars. And anything that makes the dollar less valuable makes treasuries less valuable. But I think what happened is the traders see this news that the Fed is going to buy $300 billion worth of treasuries, and they want to buy treasuries to have them to sell to the Fed. So nobody that's buying these treasuries is a real buyer. They're all flippers. They're all planning on selling to the Fed. People think that this is, you know, a can't-lose trade. I don't know about that. Because what I think is going to happen, it's not only are the people who are buying now, short-term traders, going to look to sell, but people all around the world, including the Chinese, who recently expressed concern for their treasuries, this is their window out, right? If the Fed is going to buy $300 billion worth of bonds, people all around the world who own these bonds are saying, yeah, I'm going to sell my bonds. I'm going to sell to the Fed. Because anybody who doesn't sell to the Fed is going to get crushed because this is an opportunity to sell. But anybody who wants to hold Treasury debt for the long term, what the Fed is doing, all the money the federal government has to print to buy these bonds, debases the dollar and makes bonds less valuable in the future. So this is basically, you know, waving a red flag at a bull. I think what's going to happen is the Fed is going to be inundated with sells. Everybody is going to be looking to sell, and the Fed is going to have to buy a lot more than $300 billion if it wants to stop bond prices from collapsing. It's going to have to buy all the bonds that everybody around the world wants to get rid of. And why are they going to want to get rid of them? Because they realize that the dollar is being debased. So why hold these bonds for 10 years, 20 years, or 30 years? Who knows if they're going to have any value in 1 year, let alone 10 or 20 years. And in fact, if you look at the immediate reactions in the market, the price of gold rose about $50 an ounce immediately following the Fed statement. The dollar index dropped 3 full percentage points. It dropped below 85. It went down about 84.5. One of the biggest down days I've ever seen in the dollar index. And if you look at the spread between the 10-year and the 30-year, it widened. It was probably the biggest widening of that spread that I've ever seen in my lifetime in a single day. And so what does that mean? What does it mean when you see a big widening of the gap between the yield on the 10-year and the yield on the 30-year? That is a widening yield curve. That comes because of rising fears of inflation. People want to get paid a lot more money to hold the 30-year bond than to hold a 10-year bond because there's 20 years of additional inflation. And I think those spreads are going to continue to widen. But ultimately, people are going to realize that even 10 years is much too long a time horizon to want to hold U.S. government debt. We can see a tremendous loss of value of bonds over that period of time. I was just looking at that piece of equipment, and now, you know, of course, you go figure, the light's been green the whole time, so I could have been using it. But just a shame, because I think that the reception was a lot better. And anyway, so this is what the federal government is doing, buying bonds with printed money, is the worst thing they can do for bonds. Worst thing. And this is basically everything I've been preparing for. My whole investment strategy over the years has been premised on this outcome. It's been premised that we had a phony bubble economy, that it would burst, and that when it burst, the government would do the wrong thing and try to reflate it with stimulus, and that the stimulus would ultimately boil down to monetary stimulus and massive inflation, and that is what we are seeing. And anybody who thinks that what we're looking at is a big deflation in the sense that consumer prices are going to fall and that the dollar is going to strengthen and that the people who own dollars and treasuries are going to end up on top, they're dead wrong. Those people are going to be broke. The people who have been sitting on the sidelines in cash, thankful that they didn't lose any money, are going to wake up one day absolutely broke. They're going to have all their money, they're just not going to have any purchasing power. And this is really the beginning, I think, of that actually happening. In fact, if you look at the numbers that we got today on the CPI, you know, even this government's own numbers, the CPI was up 0.4% for the month. You annualize that out, that's 5% inflation. 5% inflation, even with the government's own phony numbers that we know understates inflation. If prices are rising at an annualized rate of 5% in the worst economic contraction since the Great Depression, imagine how much inflationary forces are already underlying the economy. Prices should be dropping. They're not because the government is creating so much inflation. all the forces that are pushing prices down are being overcome by the inflation pushing prices up. But all the prices that are pushing up, all the factors that are pushing prices down are going to go away. The deleveraging, the going out of business sales, the inventory liquidation, all that stuff is going to wind down. But also, the bigger factor is going to be the dollar. And if this is the turn of the dollar, and we'll see what kind of follow-through we get. I mean, ultimately, the dollar is going to collapse. Maybe today was the beginning of that collapse. We'll see. If people around the world understand what's going on, they will run from the dollar. They will flee the dollar. They will try to be the first out. They will try to be the first ones to sell to the Fed, because nobody wants to be the last ones to sell to the Fed. And maybe some of the smaller creditors. The Chinese own over $1 trillion of our debt. But there are a lot of countries around the world that don't have nearly as much as the Chinese that might see this as their opportunity to get out. Aha, the Fed is buying. There's going to be some bidders in the market. Here's my chance to sell before the dollar loses any more value. And it's going to be a rush to the exits. And we'll see. We'll see exactly what happened. I mentioned on my video blog the other day that I looked at the chart of crude oil, and I think crude oil prices, to me, look like they're ready for a breakout. And I think once we start trading significantly above 50, maybe 55 or something like that, I think we can move up to $100 a barrel very, very quickly, easily before the end of this year, maybe before mid-year, get up to $100 a barrel. And that's going to shock people who expected commodity prices to stay low. They're not going to stay low. We're going to take out the highs across the board on every single commodity. And one of the things that has also, created a better fundamental backdrop for commodity prices, it's not only all the money that we're printing, but the supply has been further and further constrained as so many projects have been canceled and scrapped, and so many mining companies have either, some of them have gone out of business, many of them have shut down projects, and they're not going to be quick to put them back online. Remember, when commodity prices shot up before, right, in 2008, 2007, 2008, a lot of mining companies borrowed a lot of money to expand capacity. And then when prices plunged, they were in trouble. So I think when prices resume their peaks, their runs, the producers are going to be very reluctant to expand capacity. Even though prices will be rising and their margins will be improving, they just got slapped very badly for expanding too aggressively. So I think the commodity producers are going to be very, very cautious in adding capacity. Even as prices are rising, they're going to wait years, years, before they finally accept the fact that prices aren't going to fall again, because they just got burned. Many of these companies got burned by adding capacity, only to see prices plunge, and they were left with debts they couldn't pay. So I think they're going to be very reluctant this time around, which means prices are going to go up into the stratosphere before we see the extra capacity and the extra supply coming into the market. So this is probably early on, and we can expect the CPI numbers. Again, if we got up 0.4% during a period of time where the dollar was strong, imagine how much higher those numbers are going to be as the dollar starts to fall. And we start to see upward pressure on prices from the weakening dollar as opposed to a downward pressure on prices. I wanted to talk a little bit before I start taking the calls about all the news stories now about the bonuses. The bonuses being paid by AIG. Of course, there's new bonus numbers now, big bonuses being paid by Freddie and Fannie. Of course, the companies that are paying these bonuses would have been bankrupt. Here you have all these politicians that are criticizing the bonuses to AIG. Well, how can they criticize the bonuses when the government gave them the money? And they're using the money they got from the government to pay their bonuses. But the government gave them the money. I mean, I think I used an analogy before. It's like if you give your teenage son alcohol and car keys, and then you get upset that he got into an accident. Well, why'd you give him the alcohol and the car keys? What did the government think Wall Street was going to do with all this money? They get money, they pay it out to themselves in bonuses. That's what they do. If you didn't want them to make the bonus payments, they shouldn't have bailed them out. They're talking about these contracts. AIG is saying, well, we're contractually obligated to make the payments. Yes, but if the company would have gone bankrupt, those contracts would have been tossed out. Plus, there would have been no money to make the payments. They wouldn't have gotten a quarter. Now, of course, what the government should have done if they were going to bail them out, which, of course, they shouldn't have done, but maybe they could have made the bailout money contingent on nobody being paid bonuses and made them sign it. No, these guys are saying they didn't know that these bonuses were contractually obligated. Well, what kind of due diligence did they do before they handed AIG $170 billion? They didn't even know about the bonus structures, the employment cost. How much due diligence could they have done? I don't think they did any. I don't think they had a clue what was going on over at AIG. They just handed them the money. And now they act that they're outraged. What's outrageous is that the government bailed these guys out without even looking at the books. They don't know what they're doing. They are destroying this country. They are throwing money at a problem, and that they don't understand the problem. And the problem was because of all the money they've already thrown into the economy, all the inflation. And, you know, here's part of the worst part of it. Now you've got these politicians that want to get the bonus money back. And so what they're talking about doing is taxing, writing it into the tax code and saying that people who work for companies that took bonus money, who got paid bonuses, that those bonuses are going to be taxed at 100% or 90% or 80%, something like that. Well, we can't let the government do that. I mean, again, how many wrongs do they think makes the right? The government has no constitutional authority. You can't use the tax code like that. The government can't say we're going to tax one person's income differently than somebody else's income. I mean, the minute you give the government the authority to tailor the tax code to a particular occupation or a particular company, then they can do whatever they want. I mean, if they don't like, let's say they say, oh, we don't like tobacco. Okay, anybody who works for a tobacco company, your tax rate is 80%. You know, or, you know, we don't like companies that pollute. If you work for a company that pollutes, you're going to pay a higher taxes. Or who knows? They can find any kinds of ways. So they can say, you know, what if they say we're going to have a higher capital gains tax just on people who own gold stocks? We don't like people buying gold stocks, so if you buy a gold stock and you have a capital gains, it's 90%. The government can't do that. The taxes have to be uniform. I mean, they can't specifically tailor them to favor certain groups or certain individuals against somebody else. And of course, this is what we're getting. If they do this, of course, the next time they use the power, the next time they want to do it, it won't be because somebody got bailout money. The precedent of micromanaging and targeting various tax rates based on industries or people or groups that they don't like. You know, for all I know, one day they'll write into the tax code a higher tax rate just for me, just for Peter Schiff. Maybe they don't like what I'm saying. They don't like how I'm earning my money, and they think maybe I should pay a 99% tax rate. I mean, that's just confiscating wealth. It's confiscating our assets. You know, and the government, all they do is they make one mistake, they bail out the companies, and now they have to make another mistake and another mistake and another mistake. They compound the problems. Wouldn't it have been much better if they just let AIG fail? Then nobody would be getting bonuses. It wouldn't even be an issue. And the amazing thing is these companies are saying they have to pay these bonuses, otherwise the employees are going to quit. Well, I would just say, fine, don't let the door hit you on the butt. Who's going to quit in this economy? Where are they going to get jobs? And what are they going to put on their resume, the guys that worked at AIG? Hire me? I helped my previous employer lose hundreds of billions of dollars, so hire me. I can do just as well for you? I mean, this is insane. And, you know, the funny thing about it is, where would these AIG guys go that quit their jobs because they don't get a bonus? Remember, they're lucky to even be getting a salary. They should have been fired. Where are these guys going to go? Well, you know where they might go? They'll go to another company that got government money, that's using that government money to recruit people. But if the government didn't give money to anybody, then all these firms would be too broke, and nobody would have to worry about retention bonuses because you wouldn't have to retain anybody because nobody could go anywhere. I mean, this whole thing is nuts. It's like, you know, it's like I'm living in a Twilight Zone episode. It's almost amazing to believe the things that these guys are doing. And then you listen, you know, I was watching on CNBC Cramer's show, and this guy Cramer is holding up pictures of dollar bills with Ben Bernanke's picture on them, and he's saying, in Bernanke we trust. In Bernanke we trust. For crying out loud, in Bernanke we trust. How clueless is this guy Cramer? In Bernanke we trust? He thinks that this guy running off money from a printing press, this is the solution, this is going to save the economy, this is going to save the stock market? How clueless can this guy be? I mean, we're printing money. It's pure inflation. How can we trust that? There's nothing to trust. You know, but this is the kind of message that people are getting, that there's a cure here. There's a solution here. This is nothing. The government is just trying to mask the problem. And again, they're going to succeed. But who are they going to wipe out? They're going to wipe out average Americans. They're going to wipe people out who have bonds, who have their money in the bank, who have their money stuffed under their mattresses. They're going to be the ones left holding the bag. They're going to be the ones that have to pay the bonuses to all the AIG employees. They're going to be the ones that are going to get wiped out because it's inflation. It's massive inflation that's coming. And if the government thinks that it's going to be okay, that they can just create so much money that all the real estate prices go up and all the stock prices go up, some people in this country ought to take a trip over to Zimbabwe and see how well it works, because they got rising real estate prices over there. They're sky high. They got skyrocketing stock prices in Zimbabwe, too. But you know what? It doesn't work. It doesn't work. And it's not going to work in America. It's the exact same monetary policy, and there's not going to be a different result. It's going to be the same result. Anyway, let me go to the phones. First guy on hold is Mike in Florida. Hey, Mike, are you there?
Oh, hi, Peter. Hi. I just want to say I read your books, and I graduated actually just recently from college. And with an economics degree, I'm actually going to medicine. I want to say that I've learned more from your books about economics than I ever did in school. But I also want to say that I've seen you on TV many times, and you always like saying what you just, you know, got on saying, why not let these companies go bankrupt? And a lot of people are very, you know, they're very scared about that. But maybe what people need sometimes is an actual real example of this actually happening. I wonder if you ever heard of the Depression of the 1920s, when actually the Federal Reserve at that time raised interest rates right that smack in the middle of a depression. It was, unemployment was up 11.7%, and they raised interest rates. The companies that were, you know, fundamentally sound were able to invest in the future, while the ones that weren't went into liquidation. And within 2 years, unemployment was actually reversed down.
Happened at the beginning of the 1920s, and again, we had a bubble, you know, around the First World War, because the government created the First World War with inflation, just the way the government paid for the Civil War with inflation. It's like any time the government came into the economy and created money to finance a war, it was the extra money that always led to a boom somewhere, and then there was always a bust. But what happened was every time we had a bust, whether it was the 1870s or, you know, 1920, every time there was a bust, it was short-lived because the government stayed out. The government allowed the free market to work. The first time they strayed from that, the first time they really tried to stimulate the economy and bail people out, was the 1930s. And that's why we had the Great Depression. And it's amazing that our leaders are so completely clueless about American history. And it is very dangerous, because they think that the best thing to do is what we did during the 1930s. And they can't see that that was the Great Depression. And it was the Great Depression for a reason. The reason we didn't have Great Depressions before the 1930s is because the government stayed out. And now, the situation now is much more dire than it was in the 30s, because we're starting this depression in worse fundamental shape, and our leaders have more tools to do even greater damage. I mean, that's what's crazy. If they were able to create the Great Depression in the 1930s, when we had a much sounder economy beneath the surface, imagine how much damage they're going to do with our economy we have today.
I completely agree. I just think it's funny how we went from panics and economic slowdowns while we were on the gold standard to then creating the Federal Reserve, and now we get depressions and severe recessions. But, I just wanted to call and make that comment. Thanks for taking my call.
All right, thanks for calling.
No problem.
And also, you know, I addressed these problems. If you haven't seen it, I sent out a video, a link today. I made a speech over the weekend down in Auburn, Alabama, at the Mises Institute. It was a lecture for Austrian economics. It's about an hour and 10 minutes presentation, and I sent out a link. And it's up there. If you go to Mises.org, if you don't have the link, if you go to Mises.org, you can hear the entire speech. Also, I will be on CNBC tomorrow on the call with Larry Kudlow and Steve Leisman, talking about what the Fed has done today. We'll see if I can pound some sense into these guys, because they have been basically clueless to the real problems for a long time. Kudlow has been waking up a little bit recently, but Steve Leisman is still completely hopeless, so we'll see if I can do anything there. Also, I sent out an email. I know I'm going to be in Las Vegas this next weekend speaking at Doug Casey's conference. We're also going to be having a Euro-Pacific Capital meeting in Las Vegas. I think we have about 450, 500 people already signed up for it. If you're in the Vegas area, or if you can be in that area, make sure to let us know that you want to come to the conference. in connection with the Doug Casey conference. And the weekend after that, I just sent an email today. I will be down in Boca Raton, Florida, at our office down there. We also are going to be holding a seminar in Boca Raton. We just sent the invites out today. So if you're going to be in West Palm Beach, Boca Raton area, make sure and sign up for that event. Anyway, the next caller is Steve in Florida.
Hey, thanks for taking the call. I listened to the Mises speech that you gave. It was great. That's something I'm going to be sending to friends and family to try to get them to see the light before it's too late. I think it really encapsulates everything about what's happening now and what's happened over the last 20 years or so. I just had a quick question for you, though. It seems to me that even beyond keeping interest rates low, the Fed is going to have no choice but to monetize the majority of the planned $2 trillion deficit this year, because the trade deficits just aren't big enough. Even if China and all our creditors recycle the entire trade deficit, it's only about $30, $35 billion a month. You know, that's...
Yeah,
that's
look, there's no way. Plus, if you think about what Obama is saying he's doing, first of all, this deficit, is he's saying, is $1.75 trillion. I bet it'll be more like $2 trillion by the time the books are closed on the fiscal year. He's saying that I'm going to cut that in half by his last year. Well, big deal. If he cuts it in half, that means his last budget deficit will still be $1 trillion. And if you average that out, that means he's planning on adding over $5 trillion in debt over the next 4 years. $5 trillion! Now, yep. I mean, here you have the Chinese already saying they're worried about the $1 trillion they've already loaned us. Now, if China continues to buy this at the same rate, it's probably going to have to buy $2 or $3 trillion of that $5 trillion all by itself. Do you think the Chinese are looking forward to buying another $2 or $3 trillion worth of our bonds when they're already worried about losing money on the $1 trillion they have? What the Chinese are going to realize is they're going to say, you know what? It's better to lose all of this trillion. We'd be better off letting the dollar go to zero right now and just losing $1 trillion. Because if we have to finance this nonsense for another 4 years, we're going to be in a $3 trillion hole. They're better off just walking away. And they're going to figure that out, because we are asking the world. You're talking about the straw that breaks the camel's back. We're dumping a whole, we're dumping every tree in the forest on this camel. We're not just going to break his back. We're going to smash it to smithereens.
But Peter, could they even fund it if they wanted to? In the past, when it was only a few hundred billion a year, they had that money coming in from all the dollars they were getting. Even if they wanted to fund this $2 trillion, they wouldn't even have the dollars to do it, would they?
Look, I don't think they can do it, and the world is going to realize that we can't pay it back. If we borrow $5 trillion over the next 5 years, how are we going to pay it back? Especially since we're just going to borrow the money and spend it. That means our economy is going to be in a $5 trillion bigger hole than it is now. We're going to be that much less productive, that much less competitive, with that much bigger a government, which there's no way. All we're going to do is borrow more. Then we're going to have to borrow another $10 trillion, then $20 trillion. Then, I mean, when is it going to end? The world, they're going to look into this problem, and it's all going to go down soon. I mean, that is one of the reasons that, I think it's so important that people not look at the short-term volatility of the market. Doesn't matter if the dollar goes up a little bit or stocks go down. Ultimately, the dollar is going to collapse. There's nothing else to do. In the long run, it's worth nothing. So holding on to the dollars, it's like a game of hot potato or musical chairs. If you still have dollars when the music stops, you've got nothing.
Yep. It was a scary situation, so thanks a lot, Peter.
All right, thanks for the call, Steve. Okay, let's go to Barb in Connecticut.
Oh, hi, Peter. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
We're actually Euro-Pacific customers, and unfortunately, we don't have a great story yet, but we invested $1.1 million with you last March, and we wanted to put $100,000 in gold, but we were advised against it because my husband and I are both retired, and so we do live on our monthly dividends.
I wouldn't have said that is something that you shouldn't do. Obviously, if you're trying to maximize your income,
yes.
You're not going to get any income from gold.
But now
but
we're
to
losing.
Have 10% of a portfolio of gold or 12%, 15% of a portfolio in gold, that is not something that I would necessarily discourage you from doing. But obviously, when you have money in gold, you're not going to be having current income. I'm assuming most of the stocks that you bought, or all the stocks you bought, were probably highly income-oriented. And I know a lot of those types of stocks that were paying the highest dividends, a lot of those stocks took pretty good hits because a lot of those stocks were in Australia, a lot of them were in New Zealand. Those currencies were down about 40%. A lot of them were in Canadian oil trusts.
Yes.
We probably bought you a lot of Canadian trusts, and a lot of those trusts, some of them were down 90% from their peak prices in a very short period of time.
Yep.
So none of the trusts have gone bankrupt, and a lot of those trusts are up 50% to 100% now off their lows, but they're still considerably down. But
right.
I think a lot of those trusts that were down significantly are going to come back, and they're going to come back very strong once you see a reversal in the price of oil. If I'm right, if oil prices go back up to $100 a barrel, and if natural gas prices turn around, a lot of these energy trusts that people were basically throwing out the window at these prices, you know, are going to reverse course. And some of those stocks ended up cutting their dividends because what happened was as oil prices or natural gas prices fell, they couldn't maintain the dividends that they had because they get paid the dividends based on selling their oil and gas.
Right.
So in order, if oil and gas prices drop, they have to reduce their dividends, and as they reduce the dividends, that also puts pressure on the stock prices because people are selling. But as the price of oil and gas starts to rise back up, now they can start raising their dividends, and people can start anticipating that, and now the stock prices will start to rise and follow the dividends back up. Although even though they've dropped in price, and even though some of these stocks have cut their dividends that they're paying, even based on the higher prices that you might have paid, the yield is still significantly higher than what people are getting in the bank. I mean, it's not even close.
When do you think, like, your theory for all of this is going to materialize before we go bankrupt? You know, I'm just, is it going to be, like, you're talking about the dollar now? I mean, you hate to bet against your country, but...
Well, it's not a question of liking to do it or hating to do it. It's just you have to make the bet that's most likely to pay off. And if you're trying to base your future purchasing power on a currency, and if you're going to keep it in the dollar, I don't think that, you know, you're going to have much purchasing power. Unfortunately, I think a lot of people who have significant dollar wealth in bonds, in muni bonds, in, you know, government bonds, in the bank, I think a lot of multimillionaires are going to be broke. I don't think their millions are going to buy very much. You know,
And
so it doesn't make any sense to hold on to a currency when we know what's going to happen to it. It can only go down. The government has already shown what they're going to do. And, yes, there was that initial flight into the dollar, and that was a knee-jerk reaction, but I'm convinced that the real reaction is going to be a run out of the dollar. The dollar is going to free fall, and then anybody who's betting on the dollar is going to lose. And
so
I think it's much better off to own real assets. And the main reason that you want to own real stock, that you want to own stocks around the world and just not paper money, you can say, well, why not just buy European government bonds or Australian government bonds or Japanese government bonds? Well, the problem is all the governments are printing money. It's not just the United States. We have a more fundamental economic problem than these other countries. But the one thing we share is that we're all printing money. So I think all currencies are going to go down, but I think the dollar will fall more, and I think assets in this country will lose more of their value than assets abroad. But you still want to own real stuff. You don't want to bet your future on what paper can buy. You want to own real things. You want to own real assets, productive assets that can pay you dividends where the companies can raise those dividends, because as inflation really takes hold, they can start increasing the prices of their products and increasing the dividends that they pay you.
Well, when do you see these stocks again, like the Canadian energy stocks and the lows?
I mean, there's a couple of them that are still, you know, within 20 or 30% of their lows, but there are a lot of them that are 50%, 100% off their lows. You know, look what's happened to a lot of gold stocks. I mean, you know, the gold stocks had really been clobbered. Those stocks were down 80% from peak to trough, and you know, and now many of them have tripled and quadrupled. There are some of them that have gone up more than four times. You know, the gold stocks are up 9% today alone.
Well,
so,
Peter,
you know, and the dollar was down over 3% in today's trading.
How can we reach you, like, so you can look at our account and maybe...
Just call my office tomorrow, and I'll take a look at it. I mean,
what time is a good time to get in touch with you?
I don't know. I mean, just call the office anytime. I don't want to, you know, just... have a
all
lengthy
right.
discussion about when to call me. But
all
you,
right,
you know,
I will call you tomorrow. You can look at our account specifically.
All right.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Okay, next caller is Jordan in Michigan.
I have a couple quick questions. I'm reading The Biggest Con by your dad, and I was wondering, how can a gold standard be successful with a growing economy?
I don't understand. I mean, we were on a gold standard during the Industrial Revolution. I mean, the most prosperous period in American history was when we were under a gold standard. In fact, the most prosperous period of British history was when Britain was on a gold standard. I mean, when you adhere to a gold standard, you get prosperity. Sound money breeds prosperity because it encourages savings. People will save money that's going to maintain its value. And savings is the root of economic growth and capital formation. So, I mean, the best part of, you know, the best histories of growth have happened with the sounder money and gold standards. You always have the politicians that are trying to convince us of the opposite because they want paper money. They don't want the discipline of gold standard. The politicians want to be able to do what Ben Bernanke is doing right now. They want to be able to print money.
And what would the advantage, because on a gold standard, you'd have continuous deflation rather than inflation, right?
Well, under a gold standard, you wouldn't have inflation at all. You'd have solid, you know, sound money, and you would have falling prices. And over time, and between 1800 or 1790 and 1910, you know, those 120 years, prices fell almost continuously, with a few exceptions, like during the Civil War when we printed some money, or the, you know, we had falling prices. But that's how people benefit. That's how average Americans benefit from capitalism, is because capitalism lowers prices. But it only lowers prices if you have sound money. It's ever since the introduction of the Federal Reserve, that's when we turned from a nation with prices constantly falling to prices constantly rising. And when that happens, when prices are rising and things are getting more expensive, then living standards are falling. I mean, that's one of the reasons that now you need two people to work to support a household, when in the past you only needed one.
But if the prices are all falling, that means that your dollar is becoming worth more valuable, right?
Yeah, as prices are falling, money is gaining value, and savers are being rewarded for having saved money because now the money they saved has more purchasing power. In addition, you know, workers are rewarded because the salary that they're earning, the wages that they're getting paid every week, you know, go further and further. They can buy more products. That's what you want. But the government undermines all those gains and steals the productivity for itself and then uses it to dole out money to get votes.
Wouldn't your money eventually become worth so much that people would have to scale back on wages and stuff? Exactly like...
No. If you look at what happens, even if wages were falling, even if wages fell, prices would be falling even faster. So that real wages would be rising. I mean, what counts is not the level of wages. What counts is wages relative to prices. And even if wages are declining slowly over time, if prices are declining more rapidly, then people are better off. And that's what counts. What counts is your standard of living, what you can buy with your money. The nominal amount of money doesn't matter. People are going to find that out pretty soon. As a result of this massive inflation that we're creating, you know, everybody in America is going to be a multimillionaire, but they're all going to be broke. So what good is it going to be? It's not going to matter if minimum wage is $1 million an hour, if a loaf of bread is $10 million.
Okay, yeah, I'm all for a gold standard. I was just wondering how it would work. And then I have one question. I was wondering, what's your opinion, if the government hadn't bailed out AIG, what do you think the true repercussions would have been?
Well, I think it would have been bad. I think AIG would have failed, and it would have set into motion other failures. But, you know, the consequences of bailing them out in the long run are going to be much more severe than letting them collapse. You know, it's always better to take the pain, you know, rather than trying to postpone it with government intervention. It's like, you know, if you got a Band-Aid, you got to pull it off. You know it's going to hurt, so you might as well do it quickly. You know, just rip it off and get it over with. Why peel it off slowly? But unfortunately, that's all we're doing is peeling this thing off slowly, and it's going to hurt a lot longer for, you know, much more. Anyway, thanks for the call.
Yep, thanks.
All right, let me go to Brandon in Florida.
Hey, Peter, how are you doing?
Good, how are you?
I was wondering what your opinion of Alex Jones was, and what if you really side with him in the whole New World Government and or New World Order and the new movie, The Obama Deception, which I just watched.
I haven't seen the movie, so I'm not really familiar with this whole take. I don't necessarily, I mean, I don't know if it's about a giant conspiracy to have one world government and one world currency. I don't necessarily agree that that conspiracy exists or that's going on. And I certainly don't think that what's going to happen in the end is that we're going to have one, you know, central government with one money and one, you know, I don't think we're going in that direction.
All right. I saw you on Kulo about, I think it was March 9th, and I think you said you're bullish on American stocks in the long run.
Well,
and,
the guy asked me, I said the long run could be 30 or 40 years from now, because he was putting me on the spot. The market was at a low point. And, yeah, I do think in the ultimate long term, U.S. stock prices will rise, and they'll be better than having cash or having the bonds because of inflation. The short and intermediate term, I'm bearish on U.S. stocks, particularly relative to inflation, which means relative to the price of gold, relative to foreign currencies, relative to foreign stocks. And I don't think, even though I think in the long, long run, U.S. stock prices will be higher than they are now, I don't recommend that people buy them. Because I think there's better places for your money, much better places.
I just can't see from all the things that are going on in the news and everything, I can't see us heading on the right track even to be able to be bullish on American stocks.
Well, look, I'm still hopeful, and maybe my optimism is misplaced, but I'm still hopeful that eventually we will repudiate what we're doing, that we won't completely destroy this country, that eventually we will do the right thing. There's going to be a lot of pain between now and then, a lot of losses, a lot of inflation, a lot of misery, a lot of unemployment, but I'm still hopeful that at the end we will see the light and see the error of our ways, and we will repudiate what we've been doing and go back to our roots. I'm still hopeful that we'll do that, but certainly I'm going to keep my money out of the U.S. and out of the dollar during that period of time. I can still hope that we turn it around. And even if we do turn it around, I believe the dollar will lose a lot of value before that happens.
Right, right. Well, why do you think...
All right, Brandon, thanks for the call. Let me go to Bill in Oklahoma.
Hey, how are you doing, Peter?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing fine. I've got a couple of questions. And really, I need your understanding. I've been kind of studying some of the panics of 1873, 1893, 1907... and so on, and according to Galbraith, the economist, he said these things happened.
Well, Galbraith is not, I mean, in my opinion, he's not an economist. He's a Keynesian, and so he's like a witch doctor. You know, if I was a medical doctor, I'd say Galbraith is a witch doctor. I mean, everything that he believes about economics is just complete nonsense. I wish that they would take every textbook that Galbraith has written and just burn them, because they're not, you know, all they're doing is confusing people, and people, you know, study his stuff, and, you know, at the end of the course they know less about economics than when they walked into the course.
The real question I had relates to gold. Back in 1933, the Fed confiscated gold. They issued a fixed price of $20 an ounce, and then FDR won the election. And in 1934, they didn't have enough money to finance their social programs, and so they inflated the fixed price to $35 an ounce.
Well, the way it happened, I mean, there were very few social programs, during the 1930s until Roosevelt came in.
Right.
But what Roosevelt did is gold was at $20 an ounce; it was fixed, and Roosevelt confiscated everybody's gold. And then after they confiscated it and they took all the gold away from American citizens, they devalued the dollar. And see, America, they took their gold and they gave them dollars. And now all of a sudden it was $35. Gold was $35 an ounce. And so they basically confiscated the wealth of a lot of American citizens and spent that money.
So don't you think the Americans
that were smart enough not to turn in their gold, and not everybody turned in their gold, the people that didn't turn in their gold, you know, did very well, because they didn't have to suffer that debasement.
So what you're saying, then, if I'm interpreting correctly, as the dollar devalues, gold is going to have to, it's inversely correlated, is going to have to rise.
Yes, but now, see, at this point, the dollar isn't going to be devalued against gold, because now the dollar has no value, because the dollar's not backed by gold anymore like it was in the 1930s. So the dollar is going to depreciate against gold, but it's going to depreciate much more than it did during the 1930s, because we're going to crank up the printing presses without any restraint whatsoever. I mean, we don't have to confiscate gold from American citizens because American citizens don't have any gold. I mean, most of them don't. And the government's just going to print money and spend it. I mean, there is no restraint. So there's no stopping the damage that the government can do. And it's going to do a lot of damage. That's why it's so important that people understand the big picture and understand how this thing is going to play out. And that you can't hold dollars, because if you do, you'll be broke.
I know I've been trying to convince my family members of the same thing. You know, I've been reading about the panic of 1873 and the overexpansion of railroads and a lot of use of over-leveraging of debt to finance the expansion. And then Jay Cook and Company, I guess, was one of the big banks that couldn't find buyers for the Northern Pacific Railway bonds. And it reminds me of the housing crash, the overexpansion of the housing industry and the over-leverage of debt by speculation.
Yeah, but of course,
so
again, all these this excess over malinvestments, all this stuff has its roots in the monetary expansion that always preceded. And in that case, it was the Civil War. The government introduced paper money for the first time in the Civil War. We issued greenbacks, and we grew the money supply. And that resulted in false economic signals being sent into the railroad industry. And, you know, they made investments that they shouldn't have made. But we didn't have a Great Depression when the bubble burst. You know, we had a contraction, but, it wasn't a depression by any definition.
Well, Peter, thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it.
Thanks for calling. Next call, I believe, is Tony in Illinois. And I think we have time for one last caller, and that'll be it. I think we have Ian from California on the line, so that'll be it for today. Let's go for Tony in Illinois.
Peter.
Yes.
Peter.
I'm here.
Okay. You know, it's ironic that you were talking about the gold confiscation because my father, who died a few years ago, used to tell me the story of when he was about 18 or 19 years old, and he went to his safety deposit box with his mother, and they were escorted by a federal marshal, and they took their gold from them. They confiscated it. And, but what I wanted to talk about was, I agree with you on the... on our debt, it's huge. It's out of control. I don't think this money could ever really be paid back. I think your video blog is a real—it's a good idea. I like finding that in the in my email daily or whenever you put them out. But my question really is all this money? I mean, when you sit at a poker table, you got winners and losers. Where is all this money going? There's trillions of dollars being wiped out of people's 401k accounts. Where is this money going?
Well, that money doesn't go anywhere. It never really existed. That was just paper. That was just an appraised value of a house or if your house, on paper, it got appraised at $500,000 and now it's appraised at $300,000. That $200,000 didn't go anywhere. Nobody got it. It never really existed. It was only an illusion. We just pretended the house was worth this much money. So most of the money, when stock prices fall, the money just, evaporates. It's not like somebody is getting it. But when the government is printing money and giving it to us and we're spending it, where's that money going? Well, it's going to whoever's selling us the stuff that we're buying. It's going into circulation. But it's not wealth. It's just a way of divvying up the production, the goods and services that are being produced. But it doesn't add any value. So when the government just prints money and puts it into circulation, nobody is richer because of that.
Right.
There's no purchasing power that comes along with money that runs off a printing press.
So now all the money that they're printing like crazy, I mean like drunken sailors, that's just going to devalue everybody's dollars that are in their pockets now, and it's just going to cost more money to buy the same things in the future?
Well, absolutely. And then at some point, what is going to happen is it's going to precipitate a run on our currency. Because people all around the world are hoarding dollars. Right? And when they realize that the dollars they're hoarding are going to lose a tremendous amount of value, they're going to look to get rid of them. And they're not going to be able to. It's just like when the condo flippers, everybody wanted to sell their condos in Vegas or Phoenix or, Miami. They couldn't do it. When everybody wanted to sell, that's going to happen. I mean, it's like, The dollar, it's like a currency roach motel, right? You can get in, but you can't check out.
When
the world wants out of the dollar, there's nobody who's going to take the other side of the trade, and it's just going to implode.
I agree.
And that's why I'm saying it's much better to get out of the dollar too early. Because people trying to time it, people trying to get out just in the nick of time, I don't think it's going to be possible. I think at some point you're going to start to see the dollar losing 10, 20% of its value in a day. I mean, there could be one week where the dollar's value is cut in half. I mean, I think when it really starts to fall, it's going to be brutal. And people aren't really going to have time to do anything about it. So, dollar, or you're going to be broke. That's what I think is going to happen.
You know, my father used to like to talk a lot about the Depression, and he really wanted to pound it in my head. And he made sure that I was looking him in the eyeballs when he talked to me. And he said to me, you know, he died at 92 years of age, and he was just a well-read man. And he looked at me, and he said, you're going to go through a depression that's going to make the one that I went through look like a cakewalk.
Yeah, I think we're going to look back at the depression at like it was roaring prosperity compared to the inflationary depression that the government is handing us now. Yeah,
well,
unfortunately,
the American people, I think until we all wake up and stand and take our country back, this is just going to continue. It's almost like
absolutely, I agree. Anyway, thanks for the call. I've got one more call, and
thanks.
We're almost out of time. So let me go to Ian in California.
Yeah, hi, Peter. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to ask, you know, I think I had a comment, too, about the gold standard that you guys have been talking about this show. I think what I'm just have a question about is, since gold is an actual finite substance and there's only a limited amount of it, you know, if you look at that compared to fiat currency, which is based on trust, which is, in other words, infinite, what my concern would be, you know, how would a company or an individual buy, say, like a skyscraper or something? Like, how do you value that in gold? And then wouldn't it just end up that the total amount of gold on Earth would just be hoarded by certain individuals that already have it? So then how would the everyday person actually get it?
People are not going to simply hoard their money. They're going to want to loan it out or spend it. If we're on a gold standard and people have gold, they're going to loan it out. It's going to be loaned out and they're going to earn interest in gold. Or they'll deposit in the bank and there'll be loans made against the gold. So the wealth is not going to, the money isn't going to be hoarded where it's not available to businesses to invest. We'll just have real money. And of course, interest rates are always much lower under a gold standard because there's no inflation. So you're going to get your purchasing power back. So interest rates can be a lot lower, which benefits everybody because you have interest rates that are low for a real reason, not for a phony political reason. But it doesn't matter. You know, people think there's all kinds of reasons why a gold standard doesn't work. Gold is money. The reason that you want gold, if without gold it's just barter, right? If I make chairs and I want a table, I got to find somebody who makes tables and wants chairs. But when you can introduce something like gold, then I can take my chairs and sell them to somebody for gold. Then I can take the gold and go and buy a table. And it eliminates barter. But the idea is that money is the commodity that people will accept in exchange for everything else because they know it will hold its value. And, if we use something else, I mean, I can't say, well, money is going to be apples, because the apples can rot. I mean, I can't have apples stored, but I know that if I sell my chairs for gold, I can buy my table 2 or 3 years from now. I can buy it whenever I feel like it because I can hold the gold. But money has to have intrinsic value by itself. It has to be a real commodity. It can't just be paper that we run off the printing presses.
I see. Yeah, and one other quick thing. I don't know if you have time, Peter, but I just wanted to ask, you know, you mentioned how we really need to get back to a more manufacturing-based economy. I'm wondering, is that a reality? How is that going to can America go about doing that?
Well, look, it's not going to be easy, you know, and our standard of living is going to fall. You know, in order to have manufacturing, you need factories, you need capital. In order to do that, you need savings. And in order to put those savings to work, you need a low regulation environment. You need small government. The United States right now is not set up that way. We're a high tax, high regulation, low savings economy, which means we should be a poor economy. We should have a low standard of living. How have we been able to live, you know, a relatively good standard of living with these lousy fundamentals? We've done it on debt. We've been able to borrow from the rest of the world. That's what's coming to an end. This dynamic is about to change, and America is going to have to change with it. And we're going to have to finally come to terms with how much our productivity has diminished over the years, and we're going to have to accept a significant reduction in our standard of living. Now, hopefully,
if enough people do the right thing with their wealth and get it out of the dollar,
then they won't have to accept as big a decline in their standard of living as people who don't make that decision and who go down with the ship. Anyway, I guess that's it. I'm not sure if the caller's still there, but I think I got about 2 minutes left. Anyway, that's it. Thanks, everybody, for listening. You know, don't forget to tune in again next week at Wall Street Unspun on my website, www.europac.net. And don't forget, call toll-free if you want to speak to a representative, 800-727-7922, 800-727-7922. And don't forget, if you haven't bought one of the books, Crash Proof, How to Profit from the Coming Economic Collapse, and a little book of Bull Moves in Bear Markets. Both books are available in bookstores. You can order them on my website. If you've already read the books yourselves, you can always order a copy for your friends. Anyway, that's it. Thanks, everybody, for listening. I will be back again next week, Wednesday, at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, for another episode of Wall Street Unspun Midweek Market Update. Thanks, everybody, and so long.